Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Jamie Star Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode. So this is a very special episode because it's the first time somebody has been featured on the podcast twice. And it is a dear friend of mine who I grew up seeing on TV making appearances in all different shows and movies that I used to watch. And now they've become a dear friend of mine. My friend Aubrey Shea is someone who's currently an actor and singer. They also are in the process of raising funds for their second short film called Acceptance. Acceptance is all about being part of the LGBTQ community in Central Florida. With everything going on in the world right now, and especially what goes on in Florida when it comes to the LGBTQ community, this story needs to be told. Acceptance, written and directed by Aubrey Shea, will be something that'll touch the hearts of so many people, and I personally cannot wait to watch it rise and become a huge success everywhere. So without further ado, please welcome back to the Jamie Star Podcast, Aubrey Shea. All right, so you have a new project. You've been talking with me a few times before, and we're very happy. You're the first repeat, by the way.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I'm honored.
You are the first repeat to have on, and I'm very excited to make like a whole, this is gonna be like a whole special. So you have a new short film that you kind of put together, writ, direct. You basically got to be the boss, pretty much. Yes. So what was it like getting to sort of, let's start with the writing part. So have you always wanted to write your own screenplay, your own everything?
Yeah, for a while now. This is my second endeavor as writer and director. So my debut short film, Decadeless, came out in 2019. It premiered at POW Fest, which is Portland, Oregon Women's Film Festival for women, trans, and non-binary creators. Great little festival. So that was my first sort of venture into writing and directing. It's something that I've wanted to do for a very long time. And this story, the story of Acceptance, I wanted to write for a very long time. It's very personal to me. It's a queer and trans narrative set in my home state where I grew up. And yeah, this year I just felt super compelled to start the process of telling the story because of all the anti-LGBTQ plus legislation we're seeing, especially in Florida. The conversation around Florida and queerness is so loud right now. But I have a couple other projects that I am working on as well. I have a series and a couple films that I really want to write, and I really want to continue writing and directing and really go in that direction.
Oh, yeah. Like, I would love for you. I was actually thinking about this earlier today. I'm like, I think you should write a musical.
I would love to. I would love to. I've definitely thought about it. It would be hard, but I think if I had a couple collaborators, I could definitely do it.
Like,
I think that'd be fun.
Become the next, like, Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Oh, thanks. We'll see. I mean, that's pretty big shoes to fill, but I think it would be so fun, and it would be like me coming home, you know, because I grew up doing musical theater first, did professional theater my entire childhood, and really want to get back into it. But writing a musical would be the dream. Sometimes I'll have dreams where I write a whole musical, like an opera in my head, and then I wake up and I'm like, oh, it's genius. Forget it all immediately.
Yeah.
But that would be cool.
Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, I would love, yeah, that writing. For some reason, like, when I saw it, when I was watching everything and reading it, I'm like, yeah, she should write a musical in, like, the next decade or so.
I love that. Heard it here first.
Oh, yeah. And then invite me to the premiere.
Obviously.
I want to do the first interviews. Just kidding. So, you're used to pretty much like doing all the acting and like the front camera work. That's mainly what you have done a lot. So when you had a little bit of time in between writing and directing the first time and the second time, was it weird being behind the camera and telling people what to do after having that gap of time, not telling people what to do and being told what to do?
honestly, I love being behind the camera. I think as an actor that's been doing this for 20 years and have developed my own tastes in what I appreciate as an actor, in a director, it's really fun to step into that role. And also, so for my debut short, I was working with incredible actors who are all very dear friends of mine. Austin Abrams and Cooper Koch and Christina Scherer, incredible actors that I just kind of let them do their thing, honestly. Like, I really like doing that with the script. I really like trusting the actors to kind of bring their own interpretation to what's going on. I know I appreciate that as an actor. I like having an outline. I like, you know, having a plan, having a shot list, knowing exactly what we need, but then also just allowing the scenes to breathe and kind of trusting the actors to do whatever they want. So I've definitely like developed my tastes as a director from an actor's perspective. And I think other actors appreciate that, but it was really fun. I basically was like, okay, you have the script. Here are the beats we need to hit. Say whatever you want. Let's improv. And I just kind of let them do whatever. And it, I think it really adds a natural element to the final result. So I'm planning on doing that again with Acceptance. I really, this is such a personal story. And I would really want the actors to bring their own internal world to whatever that means to them, especially because we're going to be, you know, focusing on hiring queer actors. Also, it will be slightly different because we're going to be shooting on film. So you have a little bit of a tighter time to work on each shot and each scene because film development is expensive. Mm-hmm. We'll definitely probably like stick a little bit more to what's on the page, but then do like a couple alternate takes is kind of my goal, rather than sort of just doing it free form completely, because with film, you know, you don't really get to see what's happening until later. So you want to make sure that you get it. But yeah, kind of bringing that like organic in the moment vibe is something important to me as a director.
Oh, for sure. It's so great having, you know, when you have a director who knows what it's like to be in the actor's shoes, because a lot of directors don't necessarily, I hate to put it this way, but they don't necessarily get it from an actor's perspective. And I'm sure you've had that experience a few times over the course of your career where you where the director claims that they understand what you're going through and how you're doing it. However, you're like, bro, what the hell?
No comment. I've worked with a lot of incredible directors, but I've definitely had some interesting experiences where I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. So you're filming on film, like actual, like old school, back in time film. So what gave you that idea?
So my cinematographer, Gus Bendinelli, he's incredible. His work already is very textural. And that was something that we focused on with Decade List. He shot my debut short film. And he had the idea to shoot on 16mm. He has a 16mm camera. And I think that it's going to be ultimately really important to tell this story on film for a couple reasons. One, it will capture the natural beauty of Lake County, Florida in a very specific way. It's going to really add that like textural element. And the location in this film is so important. It's really its own character. And that's something that I'm interested in as a writer director in general, really allowing the locations to become their own characters. But that's especially important in this story. The setting is everything. But then in addition, and because this is a queer trans narrative set in a place like Florida where there's so much erasure happening right now, I think that film is going to add a level of timelessness and agelessness, which is going to kind of convey the underlying message that queer people have always existed. They've always been an important part of Florida's population, and queerness as well as queer phobia have a history. And so I think that like agelessness element that film brings will kind of sort of set the tone for what is an intergenerational timeless story?
I feel like from what I know about the film, it's really going to open up the eyes of so many people who, you know, the best way to describe it is believe a lot of the stereotypical Florida thoughts.
Totally. Yeah.
And I think, especially because, like, especially with the older audience and having it, like, on film, too, it could actually, it will definitely, I hope, will, like, make its mark. And, like, for a lot of people, be like, oh, like, a lot of light bulbs to turn on, you know?
I hope so. I mean, that's definitely part of the goal. Growing up in Central Florida, I definitely grew up around a lot of bigoted people, a lot of people with preconceived notions, and a lack of understanding around queerness. And then I also grew up doing theater, and so I was really immersed in a beautiful, like, out and proud queer community. And so it's important to me to bring my perspective of kind of like an intimate firsthand look at both of those populations in Florida to have this conversation.
Oh, for sure. It's like, it's important to show that, like, hey, like, at the end of the day, we're all one. And we're all just, you know, trying to make the world a good place to be. And, you know, with this story, like, I feel like it'll give so much perspective and so much, like, like I said, a lot of perspective and a lot of understanding.
Yeah, thank you.
Because a lot of people, I know for a fact, even though, because I have a cousin who is transgender. She transitioned like 7 or 8 years ago. Now, 7 years? How many, I don't know how many years it's been now. And like, even I feel like I hope too, like, this film hopefully will answer a lot of people's questions. Because do people come to you a lot with questions about the LGBTQ community? Because, like, people that I know who, like, for example, who are non-binary specifically, like, I want to be as respectful as possible, but, like, I have a lot of questions and I feel like I'm crossing the line. So what is that sort of like for you?
Definitely. I think it's a really interesting thing because, you know, I appreciate it when someone wants to understand, but there is a level oftentimes when people come to you as a queer person with a lot of questions where it can feel like somebody is expecting you to do the emotional labor of educating them. And so I think just being around queer people, talking to queer people, talking to trans people, doing your own sort of like research and understanding and reading about the queer experience, I think that's so important. And I think if you are friends with somebody who is queer, they're gonna appreciate your desire to understand. And a lot of times, you know, people don't mind answering questions. It's really where the intention is. You know, you can really feel where someone's intention is. And if someone is seeking to understand so they can be more like a better support, you can feel that versus somebody who is focused on, I don't want to get things wrong. What can I gain in knowledge from this? You know, you can kind of like feel someone's intention, and that's where it starts to feel like a little objectifying if someone's just like berating you with questions, or like if someone finds out that you're trans and then all of a sudden all they do are ask you these kind of like reductive questions about the trans experience, and then they're like only seeing you as their sort of misinterpretation of what a trans human might be in their mind. So, you know, it's complicated, but I mean, you can ask me any questions you want.
Because I will, please don't hate me for this, but I have what I like to call pronoun guilt.
Oh, yeah.
Where I will accidentally use the wrong pronouns, and when I do, I feel so freaking bad. Because, you know, these people are trying to live as authentic as they possibly can, and I just feel like I'm being disrespectful. So, like, I call it pronoun guilt.
Yes. Let's talk about it. Okay, so I totally understand, and I think that wanting to be respectful is beautiful and amazing. If you mess up someone's pronouns, the best thing to do is just be like, just correct yourself and move on. You know, I mess up people's pronouns all the time, and I'm trans, and so many of my friends are trans and queer, and we all can mess up. And no one's mad at each other for doing that. It's more so just like you correct yourself, you apologize if you want, and then you just move on. You don't need to hold that guilt. Don't need to carry that, because then the other person can feel it too, you know? And then you never want to make it a huge thing to where the queer or trans person is then having to console you about it, you know? And I'm not saying that you do that or anything. I'm kind of talking on like
a in general.
I think a lot of people are scared to mess up, but we're human. We're going to mess up, you know? It's not like queer and trans people always get everyone's pronouns correct. I think it's in the effort, and it's in the how you handle it if you make a mistake. Just correct, move on. And that's really the most appreciated response.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I worked with someone when I did college radio, and they transitioned to non-binary like halfway into the semester. And this person, they were she, her for a year and a half prior to. And when you go a year and a half referring to someone with a certain pronouns, then, you know, all of a sudden they're, I don't want to say out of, like, all of a sudden, I don't know if that's like the right way to describe it, but like, cause I really want to be respectful. Like, I get like, they transition to they, them pronouns. And I remember like being like, I must have done that a million times, and they were like, Jamie, you're trying, that's all that I ask for.
Exactly.
So like, I am one, and I will say this, I'm one who is trying. I'm not perfect, and I'm working on it. Like, it's a work in progress, I feel like, for everyone, especially when you know someone for so long, mm-hmm. and then all like you know them for years, and their pronouns change.
You can feel it when someone's trying, you know, and actually making the effort and getting better with time, you know, using your pronouns more correctly with time. Like, you can feel that from someone, versus, you know, the opposite. If someone doesn't really try, and then they like kind of mess up, and then they make it your responsibility to console them. Like, there's very different approaches, and you can really feel it. And you're amazing. You're an ally. We love it.
I really am. I know a lot of people in the community. I have lots of friends and family in the community, so I do whatever I can to, you know, be supportive. I really do. I really try, even though it's not, I can only do so much because I'm, you know, a 22-year-old living in my childhood bedroom, but you know. So anyway,
always felt that you held space for the queer community.
Yeah, I always and forever. I have people that I've known, like, besides my cousin, I have two other people who I went to, one person specifically that transitioned, actually, they're not non-binary, but they're transitioned to male, and we did I've known him since we did tutu ballet together at the age of like 4, and went all through elementary school together and high school. We don't go to the same we never went to the same college, and like, we'd see each other, we still had a lot of mutual friends, but like, it took me a hot minute because they went from she, her to they, them to he, him. So I'm like, okay, I want to be respectful. Tell me what you want. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, is that too demanding when someone says, like, tell me what it...
All depends. It all depends. Again, going back to, like, the person's intention and how they start the conversation. And I think also asking if the trans person is in the headspace to have a conversation about identity, you know? I think that that's really important. It really just depends. It's kind of a case-by-case thing, I'd say. And I would just say, like, how beautiful that you've gotten to watch someone transition into living more a more authentic life and a more authentic version of themselves that's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think just like holding the person's humanity as the most important thing when trying to have these conversations, and kind of thinking about how to ask questions in a way that's not objectifying or, I think you're already thinking about that, you know, you already have the awareness, it sounds like, to know like, oh, could this come across as like me demanding something from them?
Mm-hmm.
And I think as long as you're thinking about those things, that's what's important, rather than not even thinking about it and just kind of like inviting yourself into a conversation that could feel triggering or invasive or violating. But at the end of the day, like, you know, trans people want to be seen, and they want people in their lives to understand them. And I think, again, going back to intention, that's the important thing. And it sounds like you hold space and are thinking about these things. So you're in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. I have a non-binary person on my team at work, and I literally will get so mad at myself if I screw up. And they're like, Jamie, no, they're like, Jamie, stop. I'm like, okay.
Exactly.
They're like, stop being so anxious about him. Stop. I'm like, if you mess up, you mess up. Like, okay.
Exactly. It's just like getting out of self, you know, like if you're like really guilty or anxious about it or whatever, you can kind of remind yourself that that is a conversation about you or like the person in that position and not the trans person.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So making that sort of distinction, like you don't have to be super anxious or guilty about it. It's okay if you mess up, and just thinking about like that other person and how they're going to feel, rather than beating yourself up for something that's totally human.
Mm-hmm. I'm a human. I make mistakes. So anyway, back to the film. I know we've went on a little bit of a tangent there. So with this film, you're going into your second directorial piece. So since you've already done it before, do you kind of feel, I don't know if confidence is the right word to use, because you've been there and you've done that and you kind of know a little bit more of what you're doing?
I do. I feel very confident. I think the thing that I worry about the most is raising the money to make this film. So yeah, before I forget, we're funding on Kickstarter right now, and we have a couple days left in our campaign. So our last day of fundraising is the 4th. Our fundraiser stops at noon Pacific time on January 4th. So you know, that's kind of my first endeavor in raising funds. I'm exploring some other avenues for fundraising as well. That aspect I'm new to and less familiar with. But as far as like stepping behind the camera, like once I have the funds to make this film, I'm very confident in kind of steering the ship. And like, I have a very specific vision of the outcome, and I feel very ready for it. And with my first short film, it was done in such a way where I felt so supported by the people around me, because I was working with a bunch of my friends, and it was very small scale, but in a way that was super intimate and super flexible. And I could feel that, you know, because I was working with people who really, honestly, there was a lot of love between us. It was a very supportive environment in a way that kind of like let me not feel nervous. But also, you know, I've been in the film and television industry for 20 years. So I've, you know, worked with hundreds of directors, most likely at this point. And I felt fairly confident walking into Decadeless because of that experience. Even though it's been as an actor, I've watched a lot of directors and taken a lot of notes as to like, that works, that doesn't work, mm-hmm. and ooh, I like that. And so I feel very confident. And I want to do it more.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. When you were like, if you were like sitting at a sound stage and you weren't like, and you weren't on set, like you weren't filming a scene that you were in, did you ever just like sit and just watch the director kind of do their thing just to like learn and be like, oh, I like how this person does it. Maybe when I get the chance to do this, I'll be able to do it just like them. Would you say you did a lot of that with, like, Nashville, or do you...
Yeah. Yeah, so working on a television show is really interesting, or specifically like a network television show or cable, where most of the time, each episode, they bring in a different director. So with Nashville, I worked with dozens of directors. I think I did like 56 episodes for Nashville. And we'd have repeat directors, but every episode pretty much would be a different director coming in. And so that's super interesting. And I definitely like learned a lot and developed different tastes for different styles of directing. I saw a lot of different styles of directing, some that I meshed very well with, some that I really didn't mesh well with, but other people did. So it was a huge learning curve, not just for me as an actor because of my age, and that was the first big, really big opportunity I got in the film and television industry. Big learning curve for acting, but it was also definitely a big learning curve as I was like observing directors. And yeah, that was honestly very cool to see so many different styles in such a concentrated setting.
Yeah, did you, what about when you were on Gem? Did you do the same thing with Gem also?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we had one director, John Chu, who is
The
amazing.
John Chu.
John Chu, I know, it was incredible working with him. But yeah, I mean, I definitely have been observant. Every project, I've been looking out and going, what do I think about this? But yeah, working on Gem was so fun. I actually rewatched Gem the other day for the first time in like, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. It's like, this shit's crazy.
I mean, yeah, I need to go back and rewatch it because it's you, Stephanie Scott, who I have a picture with. I don't know if I've ever shown it to you, but I have a picture with Stephanie Scott. I have to send it to you. You're gonna freak out because we're both little babies. And Hayley Kiyoko, who I just recently rewatched on Wizards of Waverly Place.
Nice, amazing. She's so great.
That's how I like
Love.
discover all these people. I discovered you from Disney, I discovered Stephanie from Disney, and Hayley all from Disney.
And Aurora Perrineau is doing amazing things. Shout out to Aurora as well. Yeah, it was a good group. It was a good group. Juliette Lewis, Molly Ringwald. What?
Oh yeah, now John Chu is has a lot of high expectations for, especially from people like me who are diehard Wicked fan, as diehard Wicked fan.
Cannot wait to see what he does with Wicked. I am waiting in high anticipation.
Yeah, it's going to be especially because it's my favorite musical of all time. So the bar is set pretty high. And it's like, how cool is it to say that you've worked with someone, worked with John Chu before John Chu signed on to Wicked and everyone kind of learned his name?
It's so cool. It's so cool. It's wild. I don't know how else to describe it, but it's really cool seeing how his career has taken off since Gem. I'm so happy for him. It's amazing. And I feel really lucky that I got to work with him on Gem, because even though Gem was like a very high concept, it really was, and it was distributed by Universal, it was an independent film, it was a Blumhouse film, and kind of a tight budget, and there was definitely the indie spirit to it, so that's really cool, having worked on like an indie with John, now seeing everything that he's doing, it's really cool, really awesome.
Yeah, and then when you f when this movie gets this short film gets created, will you do it in Florida?
Yeah, so that's definitely part of why our budget is set at what it's set. We will shoot on location. Florida is such an essential part of this story. It cannot be shot anywhere else. And I really want to, kind of like what I was saying earlier, like incorporate a lot of Lake County into the footage to really like set the stage, and like really pay homage to Central Florida, Lake County, Florida. And I'll be featuring a lot of places that I'm very familiar with from my own childhood. So it's really, really important that we shoot in Florida. And like the natural ecology of Florida is unmatched. You don't get that really anywhere else in the United States. The swamps and, just the very specific ecology there is really iconic and it's specific to Florida. And I really want to showcase that because I think the theme of water in Florida, and sort of as a bigger metaphor, is very unifying. Kind of no matter who you are in Florida, you've spent a lot of time by the water, on the water, in the water. And so, this story is inspired in part by my relationship with my aunt. She was a gay woman living in Florida, and she lived in Lake County. And so we're going to be shooting in Lake County. And in Lake County, it's called Lake County because there's like three major lakes kind of surrounding the towns there. And I really want to feature that. And I think it's not only just like a cinematic metaphor, it's kind of like very true in that no matter the political tension, no matter who you are, if you're queer, if you're not queer, if you understand the queer experience, if you don't, like, water in Florida is kind of symbolic of community in a way. And the theme of community is so strong for the story and queerness in general.
Yeah, it, like, brings everybody together. The water brings everyone together.
Exactly.
Yeah, that is so, so cool. So with this upcoming, you know, endeavor and this project and with everything, like, what are you most looking forward to with bringing this sort of masterpiece to life?
I think just telling the story in general. I mean, I'm really excited for a lot of aspects. I'm really excited to shoot on film. I'm mostly excited to work with the actors on such an intimate story to my life. And in Decadeless, I was also in it as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
This one, I'm planning on being in it. I'm going to only be on the other side of the camera, and I'm very excited for that. You know, there's a character who's, this story is heavily fictionalized, but there's a character loosely based on me, a young trans non-binary person who travels home to Florida after several years away to attend their aunt's funeral. And a lot of people have asked me, like, oh, you're going to play that role, right? And I don't want to, actually. I want to, one, work with a younger actor, somebody closer to 20. I'm 30 now. And I think it will be a really special and interesting experience for me to work with somebody else in portraying this story. And I want to let it take on a life of its own to be its own thing. But also, I think it will be really special to just, like, create it and watch it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so not have to, not really have to watch yourself, just watch the magic that you created.
Yeah.
Do you have a cast ready to go? Or are you going to, like, do, like, the same, like, auditions and things like that to find the right cast?
So I have a lot of actors that I grew up doing theater with in Florida who I have reached out to and talked with about playing some of the ancillary cast roles. So I have some selects from all the incredible actors I worked with growing up doing theater in Florida. There's so many amazing actors there. And then for my three leads, we're going to be kind of doing, probably exploring some offers and potentially also auditioning. We'll see. I don't have actors attached yet. I definitely have people in mind, but we need to raise the funds first.
Yes.
Attached, but I'm excited to see what that looks like, and I definitely want to make sure, though, that we're also casting a lot of people out of Florida.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So the fundraising portion, we only have 6 minutes left, according to my cheap Zoom. So the fundraising portion, you said it's new to you. Is it something, have you learned a lot from it?
Yes. Oh my God, yes, definitely. I didn't know anything about it before. And so Kit Williamson, who is the creator of Unconventional, the TV series that I'm a part of right now and that's set to come out this year, he has helped me a lot. He's a producer on the film, Acceptance, my film, and he is a master at fundraising and kind of helped prepare me and walk me through what it's like fundraising on Kickstarter. He's done it a million times. He funded his whole series, Eastsiders, on Kickstarter. So it's definitely been a huge learning curve. It's not necessarily something that comes the most natural to me because you really have to, like, push out content. Something I really have to, like, work myself up to do, but it's been good. It's been really good. It's been really fun, and it's made me really have to break down the intimate details of this film, why it's important to me, why it's important to me that we tell it now. It's gotten me so familiar with this thing that I've created, and really gotten very specific on conveying the story and the message, because you have to be so specific when you our fundraising and being like, you know, you have to provide.
You got to give every little detail.
Exactly. So that's been really cool. That's been really fun. And it's been awesome seeing it come to life. And yeah, I hope we make it.
I hope you make it. I really.
Once again, I've been speaking with my dear friend, Aubrey Shea. I hope in this episode you were able to learn and educate yourself about things that go on in the LGBTQIA+ community. I know for a fact, as we were having this conversation, I learned a ton. So make sure you keep an eye out for everything and anything Aubrey Shea.